Now, back in 1961, when I was just about a twinkle in my parents' eye, Wally Funk was among the Mercury 13, the first group of American pilots to pass the Woman in Space program. She sailed through a series of rigorous physical and mental tests, with one of her scores beating the all-male Mercury 7 astronauts, including the very famous John Glenn, who, of course, became the first American in orbit. But it didn't work out, and rather than give you the reasons why now, I thought we'd talk to Sue Nelson about the story and the book, which is called Race for Space. She's co-written it with Wally Funk, and she joins us now. Good morning, Sue. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. You're welcome. It's Wally Funk's Race for Space, and I wrote it, not Wally, but it is all about Wally.
Absolutely. Right. and so why your fascination with Wally Funk, then?
Well, apart from the fact that she's got the best name known to man.
She has, hasn't she?
Yes. It was because I'd first met her 20 years ago when I was making a radio documentary about the Mercury 13, because I was quite astonished that I'm a huge space fan. I make a Space Boffins podcast. I used to report on space missions for the BBC, and I still make space films for the European Space Agency. So, you know, we're talking a big geek here.
Yeah.
And yet I'd never heard of them, and got to know her then, got to meet several of the other women who'd also taken these really physically, you know, sort of superhuman tests where they had to be tested to their sort of physiological limits, because at the time people didn't know what would happen to the human body when it went into space.
Yep.
Some medical doctors thought the heart might explode. So I got to know her there, and then a couple of years, we'd kept in touch, and then a couple of years ago, we started working together on A History of Women in Space, a radio documentary for BBC World Service, and Wally and I started spending a lot more time together, not just through work, but also as a friendship. And she asked me to write, during this period of time, she asked me to write her autobiography, and I said no. And she was really disappointed. And I said, well, because I don't want it to be a selection of on this date you did this, on this date you did that. I want it to be this, what we were doing, our friendship, and her, because she's so funny. She's so larger than life. She's a brilliant pilot, but a terrible driver. She speaks in a very idiosyncratic way. She talks like that. And then we'll pause at a different place. And I thought, you'll lose all that. You know, you lose all that if it is just a very straightforward biography.
Right.
And I wanted people to know what this extraordinary woman is like, because she didn't give up. She has still, for the last 50-odd years, still been trying to get into space. She's trained with cosmonauts. She's done centrifuge tests. Because she's a pilot, you know, she has done like 6G doing her aerobatics and things like that. And she's still ready to go into space because she's bought a ticket with Virgin Galactic.
Amazing.
So hopefully next year on her, during her 80th birthday year, during the year of the moon landing, celebrating the 50th anniversary of the moon landings, here's a woman who could have been the first woman on the moon if things had been a little differently, because at that time in the early 60s, NASA would not admit women into space.
I'm actually staggered that not only would they not admit women into space, I'm also a lowly private pilot, Sue, and
she'd love you then.
And I'm staggered to discover that when Wally went to do this course, they didn't have any jet experience, the women, because they weren't allowed to fly jets.
I know, and of course, being the sort of women that they were, these were all very, very good pilots, very determined women. Some of them, in order to learn how to fly, you know, they sort of forged their parents' signatures so that they could get into a plane a little bit earlier than they should have done. But in fact, the front cover on the book shows Wally when she worked at Fort Sill Military Base.
Yeah.
She was their first female flight instructor. And she's by a T-33 trainer jet.
Yeah.
And that's because she was learning to fly that jet. So although the women, technically, they weren't allowed to fly jets, they actually, a lot of them had done. I mean, one of the other Mercury 13, Jerry Truhill, she used to test bombers, new planes and bombers and test pilots. So they some of them did have the jet experience, but, you know, officially none of them were allowed to fly jets.
Amazing.
And that was the excuse NASA gave. I mean, it was, to be fair to NASA, it was, the opinion at the time was that women should just be homemakers, you know, and if you had a job, you would just be a secretary or a nurse or a very traditional career for a woman, certainly not a pilot, and certainly not have ambitions to go into space, which is why the press at the time, it's hilarious, you know, reading through all these old, lovely old magazine quotes and newspaper articles, and even if, you know, you find the odd interview on YouTube of the very first woman to do it, Jerry Cobb, to pass it, where the reporter's saying to her, what's a pretty little girl like you want to do going into space? Don't you want to get married? You know, and it would talk about, you know, well, they'll need to take their high heels while they go on board. It was very much an era of Barbie dolls, and where women were expected to be Barbie dolls as well. And you know, Wally was the youngest. She was only 22 when she passed those tests. Theoretically, she shouldn't have even done them because the age range was between 25 and 40. But she was that determined, that good a pilot, and she lobbied, basically. She wrote letters saying, I want to do this. I want to, you know, do this for my country. And they let her take the pass and the tests, and she passed with flying colors.
Now, the odd thing about this is that there were 25 women, I think, chosen for testing, and they had the support but not the official sponsorship of NASA, and they volunteered for the Women in Space program with an independent organization called the Lovelace Women in Space program. So what went wrong then, Sue?
Well, basically, the same guy, Lovelace, refers to an amazing name, Randy Lovelace. Mm-hmm. His name is William Randolph Lovelace II. He was the medical doctor supervising the tests, and that's called the Lovelace Clinic, which are in Albuquerque, New Mexico. But he was also the man in charge of devising the tests and testing the Mercury 7 astronauts. So he was a NASA employee, but he did this as a privately funded program, and some of that money came from the woman who broke the sound barrier, Jackie Cochran. She was probably the most famous aviator in America at the time. So it was privately funded with that money, and they lost the funding, and that's why they couldn't go any further. But then two of the Mercury 13 went to Congress and testified at a committee to say, you know, look, we've got women here, they're brilliantly qualified, we want, you know, the rules to be changed so that NASA will admit women and let these women go into space. And they lost their case. John Glenn and John Carpenter spoke against them. Yeah. And John Glenn said it was against the natural social order for women to be in space. And unfortunately, Jackie Cochran, who was supposed to be and had funded them and supported them, her defense turned out to be the worst thing possible, because she sort of said, well, yes, I do think women should go into space, but maybe not now.
Oh.
So unfortunately, her evidence testified effectively against them. And there have been lots of theories maybe as to why that might have happened, maybe because she was too old at the time to go into space herself after having had an amazing aviation career. But nobody fully knows, and she's dead now, so we can't ask her.
Of course, history will show us that the Russians got there. Valentina Tereshkova became the first woman in space about a year after that subcommittee meeting. And America had to wait another 20 years, I think, for the also brilliantly named Sally Ride, it has to be said.
Yes. And, I mean, the women were really pleased when Valentina went into space, because it was a woman.
Yeah.
But she wasn't a pilot, obviously, like them. And so, while they were delighted with Sally Ride, she wasn't a pilot like them. So actually, the woman that they most were excited about going into space was Eileen Collins, because Eileen Collins was the first woman to be the commander of the space shuttle.
Right.
And in 1995, she had heard of the Mercury 13. She invited them. Some of them had died by then, but seven were able to go and watch her launch into space as the commander, as the pilot of the space shuttle. And for many of them, that was the first time they'd met each other.
Wow.
Because the women, unlike the Mercury 7, they did their tests as a group.
Yep.
If you've seen the film The Right Stuff, it's a brilliant film.
Yep.
And a great book. You'll remember them all, you know, sort of rallying around the fact that they had to do such awful physical things. And but the women all did them in twos, in pairs. So they never met the other of the other women. And Wally's partner dropped out within hours. So Wally did her test by herself. So 1995 was quite an incredible year for them, really, because they set eyes on some of their other successful pilots for the very first time.
Amazing. And she didn't give up, as you say, and she kept her career in aviation, although a bit of a kind of sidestep, but still nonetheless impressive. The first female Federation Aviation Authority inspector in 1971, and she became the NTSB's first female air safety investigator. That basically means she would be travelling around the country, I guess, looking at the cause of air accidents.
That's right. She specialised with four states on the West Coast, and including Hawaii as well.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of her, she would go to the scenes of crashes. She said they're mostly either pilot error, wind speed, weather, you know, weather, or mountains. She said an awful lot of crashes were caused by light aircraft just flying into mountains and fuel
mm-hmm.
problems. But she was the first air crash safety investigator on the scene of, at the time, the worst aviation accident in history in the late 70s, when a passenger jet flight coming into San Diego Airport collided with a Cessna, and it was above the airport, is really right near a residential area.
Yeah.
Well, with the crash itself, 20 homes were destroyed.
I remember it, yeah.
144 people died, and Wally was the first investigator on the scene, a job she's described as a little bit like being a detective.
Yeah.
Because you have to look at the angle of the debris that has fallen into the ground, the spread of the the debris. Even she said where, say, the wings might have taken off the tops of planes as they came, the tops of trees, sorry, as they came down, you would note the angle that, because all that would piece together what had happened, where the crash had taken place in the air, and try to ascertain what had caused the crash. And she loved it, because she said it. She felt that by doing her job and doing it properly, it used all her knowledge of flying and flying different aircraft, because you had to know about all the different planes and engines as well. But also she felt that it would prevent accidents again in the future by knowing accurately what had gone wrong to cause such a loss of life.
Well, that's right. I mean, I'm a big fan of, because I'm interested in aircraft, of the Air Crash Investigation series on the TV, and I was watching it only yesterday,
yeah.
And they were saying, you know, without these guys and women like Wally, who go through a quite harrowing job at times, you know, we would never advance aviation and make it safer. So without these people, we would still be back in the 60s with crashes happening all over the place.
That's right. And she, I asked her, you know, what was it like? You'd sometimes have to pick up body parts, she said, because the coroner wouldn't always do the job properly. And she's, Wally was always a bit of a tomboy, you know, grew up, loved sports, and she calls herself a tomboy. You know, she hunted, she skied, she shot her gun to an extremely high standard, won a National Rifleman's Award, Distinguished Rifleman's Award. She would skin rabbits and sell their pelts outside her mum and dad's store. And so she said for her it was no big deal.
Because,
you know, that's the sort of upbringing that she had.
Incredible.
But I think you also get inured to it because, you know, her first couple, she said, it did get to her.
Yeah.
But then you become, you know, you learn to professionally detach yourself and to just do the job and to do the best job you can. And, and that's very Wally, because she's a, you know, a, an incredibly determined, feisty, but funny and nice and eccentric and, you know, very warm human being. And, she's, yeah, what a career, both as an aviator, but also as somebody who broke barriers within space, but was denied her rightful role as a space pioneer as well.
It doesn't make a lot of sense when you talk about Wally that NASA didn't have the wit to say, well, hang on a minute, we're not going to find anybody better than this lady.
Yeah. Well, I say, well, you know, nearly 20 years before they admitted women, and the first woman didn't actually go up till 1983, I think, with Sally Ride, as you mentioned, and that was over 20 years.
Yeah.
So, yes, it was bizarre when you look back. You just think, what? But then also, you know, the Russians, although they had Valentina Tereshkova, they didn't put another woman up until nearly 20 years later either,
right.
And that was purely because they heard that NASA had allowed women into their astronaut corps, so it became a little bit of, oh, they're doing it, so let's do it, let's beat them again. So in fact, Russia put their second woman in space shortly before Sally Ride went up, as a sort of, you know, thumbing their nose up, no. So you know, for all Russia's pioneering getting that woman in space, it does look. History, I think, judges them as just doing it as a token gesture.
Yes. And so here we are now, and as you mentioned there at the beginning, Wally still hoped to make it into space because she signed up to fly on Virgin Galactic, which, of course, had delays, but allegedly now that will go into space next year, and fingers crossed, Wally will be on it.
Well, she won't be on the first one because that's always been reserved for Richard Branson and his family.
Yeah.
So she's hoping to be on one of the flights very soon after that first flight. And it would be wonderful, you know, if it does happen during that moon landing anniversary year next year.
Yeah.
Because Wally is almost 80 now. She won't like me telling you her age, because she's 45. But she's, she absolutely wants to get up there. She bought her ticket in 2010. So, I mean, here's a woman who's used to waiting, obviously.
Yes.
But it's so funny. But she doesn't ask hassle Virgin Galactic. It's really funny. She emails them. She rings them up. And she's always like, oh, why am I going up? Why aren't you making progress? Why aren't you? We're definitely, and I hope, because I went with her to Spaceport America in New Mexico last year to see the 2-mile-long runway, incredible building where she's the spaceport. It's very futuristic with the mountains in the background, and it's near White Sands Missile Base, so you've got lots of restricted airspace around you. It's an incredible location, and when she does go up, I hope to be there to watch her take off and welcome her when she gets back, finally an astronaut at last.
I can just kind of, from what you're saying, I'm just going to imagine her kind of pushing the pilot out of the way and said, oh, go on, let me have a go, I can do this.
Yes, that will be an issue. When we were at a museum, one of the NASA museums in Houston, there was unexpectedly a Mercury capsule there, unexpected because it was from the Washington Air and Space Museum, but it was on loan. So it was a real surprise to see it, because here was the craft that if she would have gone in space, it would have been something, you know, that would have been like that. And I said as a joke to her, I said, oh, look, you know, Wally, you could just, because the door was open, it was suspended on chains from the ceiling with a lovely sort of starry background. And the door was open, so you could see the panels inside, which she said, oh, my goodness, I could, she recognized all the controls. She thought would be easy to fly. And I said, oh, you could, as a joke, you could get in there, Wally. And she went, no. They won't let me. I've tried before in Washington and they stopped me.
Oh,
so,
Wonderful.
You know, your joke about her trying to get into the pilot seat is a little bit on the button there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm delighted that you hooked up with her, Sue, and you've managed to write this book for her. Brilliant. What a story. And what a lady. I just hope that she makes it next year to space. It'll be a tragedy if that doesn't happen now after all this.
Absolutely, I agree. I think, you know, the world owes her.
Yeah, and a bit. Yeah, Wally Funk's Race for Space. Sue Nelson, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you very much.
All the best. Take care. Bye-bye.